You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 265 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Justice League Infinity number 5, Robin and Batman number 1, I Am Batman number 3, The Joker number 9, Black Manta number 3, Titans United number 3, Justice League Last Ride number 7, Batman Urban Legends number 9, Action Comics 1036, Wonder Woman 781, Supergirl season 6 episode 18, Truth or Consequences, Stargirl, Season 2, Episode 13, Summer School, Chapter 13, Titans, Season 3, Episode 10, Troubled Water, and Why the Last Man, Season 1, Episode 8, Ready, Aim, Fire. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news, John Krasinski has been cast as Superman in Dwayne Johnson's League of Super Pets.
That's pretty cool, Drew. I have a little mini rant. It's nothing to do with the casting of him. That's awesome. I don't know if you saw this. There were multiple sites that reported this, and the headline in big exclamation points is, John Krasinski cast as Superman, and that's it. That is so wildly misleading, Drew. That is everything I hate about internet clickbait articles. He's just doing the voice in an animated movie. And all of these sites were very intentionally trying to lead you to believe that John Krasinski was the new live-action Superman.
Yeah, I saw some of those titles, and I was like, what? Yeah, I hate how they can be misleading in their titles. Drives me nuts. But did you see the trailer for Super Pets? It looks pretty funny.
I did. One thing I found interesting from the trailer was Kevin Hart, I'm pretty sure, is supposed to be playing Ace the Bat Hound, but they're not calling him. I think one time, Drew, there's one line where they do call him Ace, but he's got superpowers, which I didn't think Ace normally had. So it's kind of interesting. I'm assuming based on the trailer, he is definitely not Ace the Bat Hound yet at the beginning of the film. I'm wondering if that's something that will happen.
I was confused by that too, because that's who I thought that character was. And number one, we never saw him suited up. And then number two, like you said, he had superpowers, and I was a little confused by that. And I was just like, okay, well, I'll see where this goes.
Yeah. So I don't know if he's not really that character and people just assumed. I think he is, though. I'm pretty sure they call him something else, like Invince a Dog or something like that. But I'm pretty sure at some point in the trailer, somebody says the word Ace, referring to him. So I'm interested to see their spin on that. It's not, again, I have no opinion whatsoever of Ace the Bat Hound. So they can do whatever they want. I was just surprised by that.
Yeah, and it's always possible those powers he has, he's going to lose them at some point too. So we'll just have to see what they do. They could be going in a totally different direction. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Have you been searching for that one heavy metal podcast that covers all of your favorite geeky topics as well? Well, look no further. The Metal Geeks Podcast is here to save the day. Whether you are into video games, films, comic books, theme parks, or even, yes, heavy metal, then the Metal Geeks Podcast is a place for you. Check us out on all of your favorite podcasting apps, and we are proud members of the ESO Network. Keep it geeky and keep it metal.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
For you.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Justice League Infinity number 5. Before Wonder Woman leaves with the Justice Alliance, Diana buries Darkseid and says a prayer for his soul. Wonder Woman introduces herself to Unati, who is less than thrilled to meet Diana. Unati is the sole survivor of her Themyscira that was decimated in a civil war 200 years ago. She had lost faith in a sisterhood the day her mother plunged a sword into her back. Superman tells Diana how he and Cal ended up on Earth controlled by the Nazis. They worked with Zod, Doomsday, and Metallo to free that world of Nazi control. Superman and Cal hear a telepathic scream and search Vandal Savage's fortress until they find his Oracle, a Martian that Vandal Savage kidnapped, tortured, and forced to control the populace, even peer into the future. Cal is reunited with the Justice Alliance and his wife Unati. Martian Manhunter has discovered the location of the multiverse, the multiversal disturbance. It is a place that transcends time, a cosmic interface where all universes meet. Feels like we might actually be moving towards the end of this story.
Yeah, I agree with you, Drew. It does feel like it's building towards an end. I just still... It shouldn't be as much of a mystery as it feels as to what the ending is. Not like, how's it going to end? But like, literally, what is the end game of this story? Obviously, at some point, it's fixing the multiverse, but... I don't know, Drew. I do wonder if this story would read a lot easier if you were reading it all at once. And I don't know if it's being hurt by us reading it monthly and forgetting stuff, but I just don't feel like this story has flowed well. I don't think this issue was bad by any means. But again, I finished it and I was kind of like, I still don't get this. Like, I just didn't feel like I got what the story was about fully.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, we know that Amazo is causing this somehow, and I honestly don't think he's doing it on purpose. And the end result is going to be them fixing it. But what was the point of the story? That's the big question mark. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Robin and Batman number 1. Dick Grayson is in a mask, but not in the Robin costume. Dick is being tested to see how well he does in the field by himself. One of the men pull a knife on Dick. Batman alerts him, and Dick says he's got this. As Dick gets grabbed by one of the men, Batman tells him, "No, you don't. You're not paying attention to the whole picture." Dick repeats he has this, and he takes out the man who grabbed him. Batman states, "You've lost control of the situation. Abort the mission." Dick takes his earpiece out and continues to take down the rest of the men. Batman pulls up in the Batmobile, and when he gets out, he says, "I told you to abort the mission." Dick replies, "And I told you I totally had this under control." Batman throws a batarang at a man behind Dick, who is about to get him. "Did you?" Alfred picks up Dick from school and learns that Bruce had Alfred destroy his costume. This pisses Dick off. Dick decides to make his own costume, the opposite of Batman, bright red, green, and yellow colors. Dick follows Batman out into the field. Batman is tracking down the guys from the other night because something strange is going on with them stealing meat trucks. Killer Croc confronts Robin, and Batman must save him. Batman and Robin return to the Batcave, and Batman has 2 broken ribs. Batman shows Dick the costume he had made, and Dick gets mad when he realizes Bruce read his personal journal. The issue ends with Killer Croc climbing out of the sewer and walking to Haley Circus. He walks by a Meet the Killer Croc booth, and we see a flashback of Killer Croc staring from his booth at the Graysons walking by. Dick is on his father's shoulders, laughing and pointing at something off in the distance. Next, Killer Croc stops at the trapeze and stares for a minute before moving on to a poster of the Flying Graysons. Now, I gotta tell you, Cletus, I think what I found most interesting about this issue was the fact that Killer Croc had been at Haley Circus and knew of Dick, and they had some sort of connection. I kind of found that fascinating.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing that I kind of am interested, Drew, is I'm not sure that Killer Croc's antagonistic in this story. It's possible that he is going to be who Lemire wants to be, the villain of the story, but part of me almost wonders if that's not the direction he's going in. I don't know. I'm kind of curious to find out.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with you. He felt kind of antagonistic a little bit, but I don't know. I got the vibe that I agree with you. I don't think he's... It doesn't feel like he's against Batman and Robin, per se.
No, it felt... I might be misremembering the scene, but it felt like in the sewer, he wasn't initially going to attack Robin until Batman showed up. And again, I might be misremembering how that scene played out, but I didn't think that he was a threat until he got threatened by Batman. And then he turned antagonistic. So that I don't know. I really liked this issue, Drew. I love this creative team. I've read another series that they do together, and this was exactly what I was hoping for. It's phenomenal artwork. I love the watercolors. And then, I'm a big fan of Lemire's writing. So I'm very excited for more of this story.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too. I'm excited about the next issue. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. I Am Batman number 3. Jace Fox gets a lecture from his father about being late to morning meetings and projects being late and getting through to development. Lucius thinks Jace is sliding back into his old ways, when in reality, being the next Batman is affecting his job. At the Gotham City Juvenile Detention Center, Detectives Whitaker and Chubb escort lawyer Tanya Fox to see Morris Caulfield, the teenager who shot Anarchy. Mrs. Fox is working the case for free. Sears Army, the moral authority, is attacking the juvenile detention center, and they are here to free Morris. Vault tells Jace that Tyler Arkadine is being moved to custody in Gotham City after being extradited from Vietnam on human trafficking charges. Jace states that Arkadine tried to start a riot in Alleytown, and Jace wants to know what Arkadine's connection to Gotham is. Vol picks something up on Sears' video feed. Ezekiel King leads a faction of the Moral Authority, and he's calling out Batman. Jace tells Vol to let the other bats handle him. Vol tells Jace they are busting out the same kid that his mom is defending, and she might be in the building, so Jace changes his mind. Gunfire erupts between the Moral Authority and the police. When Batman shows up, the police give him cover fire. Batman takes down Ezekiel King, and then Seer has a phone with a map that leads to her. The police try to arrest Batman, but he just walks away. When Batman reaches Mrs. Fox and Morris, Mrs. Fox has shot one of the Moral Authority in self-defense. Batman takes the gun from her. Simon Saint is worried that Arkadine is going to talk about the hidden agenda when interrogated by police. Victor assures Simon that Arkadine is not going to be a problem, and when the police go to interrogate Arkadine, they find him dead in his cell. Now, I had a question for you, Cletus, because when we got to the Simon Saint part, we had that Victor character there. I couldn't remember who that was.
No clue. I'm not sure we're supposed to know who that is yet, though. I thought I could be wrong, Drew. I felt like that was maybe an introduction to that person.
Okay. I didn't know if I'd forgotten who he was or not, but I made sure to note his name.
Yeah, I had the same thought, Drew. My assumption is that that was an introduction to that character, but if it wasn't, like you, I don't remember who that is either. The Arkadine being killed in his jail cell really didn't land for me, Drew, because I felt like we were told that this guy was who Jace was after, and he was really this bad guy they wanted to take out, but I don't feel like I ever really saw enough to appreciate him as a villain. It didn't really mean a lot to me when he died.
I agree with you on that, because we really haven't seen Arkadine that much. I realize he was the main villain in that first arc with him, the prelude or whatever you want to call it series to this series, but they never really showed us. They never really showed us him. We only heard about him. Surprised they shot him at the end of this issue, because I was expecting more out of this character, out of this villain, especially since they've been trying to build him up.
Yeah, I agree. I never felt like he really established his presence. We were told, like I said, he was on the periphery, right? We were told a lot about him, but I don't know. I'm hoping maybe this new character, potentially new or old character that neither of us remember, becomes a more interesting threat and maybe is the reason that Jace moves to New York ultimately. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they're starting to wrap this up. I'm not really sure how many more issues we have. I think we have 3 or 4 more issues before the big move. But we know they're going to be wrapping up at least Jace's part of the story in Gotham. So I have a feeling Simon Saint's not going to be defeated by the time he moves. I think he's still going to be sticking around. But we'll see. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. The Joker number 9. Jim Gordon tells Lady Bane about the tragedies in his life caused by the Joker. Barbara being shot and how the Joker tried to prove that Jim could be broken in The Killing Joke. Jim also tells Lady Bane how Joker made his second wife, Sarah Essen, choose her death in Batman Cataclysm. And then Jim realizes that Lady Bane is a loaded gun, that he'll never have to pull the trigger. Julia Pennyworth discovers that Venom was created by a scientist named Rudolph Porter as a highly addictive derivative of the classic Miracolo formula. The disgraced General Timothy Slaycroft brought the drug from Santa Prisca. The first time Batman came to Santa Prisca, it was to take down General Slaycroft. Slaycroft put Juanta in touch with his superiors in Washington, some players inside U.S. military intelligence. Some of these same contacts also sold a cruise missile to the American supervillain, the Joker, in Death in the Family. This is really tying into some old stories, Cletus.
Sometimes I appreciate, Drew, when they reference older stories and like make them relevant again, but this one felt really more like to me, this came across as a way to try to legitimize the story they were telling right now. They're like, see, look, this isn't a forgettable, mediocre comic. Look how many famous stories we're tying it into.
Yeah. Jim Gordon and Lady Bane arrive at a house. It's a massacre. The duo step around the dead bodies and make their way to the inner courtyard where the Joker is having tea. Lady Bane charges Joker, and the man sitting next to Joker says 3 words, Orchid, Hammer, and Obsidian. Lady Bane falls flat on her face. The man states that will only give them 5 minutes, and it will not work again. The man reveals himself to be Dr. Friedrich. He confirms he is a member of the network. Dr. Friedrich creates body doubles for members of the underworld able to pay his fees. The doubles would have heart attacks or aneurysms, and then the bodies would be swapped in prison and the clients given new faces and identities. Dr. Friedrich said there was also another use for his work that he did not expect. A number of powerful individuals in the world who have grown fond of the taste of human meat. Next, Dr. Friedrich takes James and Joker to see his attempts at creating Joker duplicates. Friedrich thinks Lady Bane is coming to kill Joker, but it's one of the cannibals from Texas that kills Friedrich. They inject Joker with something and then take him prisoner, then throw a knife in Jim's chest. Lady Bane wakes up Jim looking for the Joker. Jim tells her in Texas, and Lady Bane tells Jim, sorry, but die knowing that you will have your vengeance. And then Lady Bane leaves Jim to die. Jim pulls out his phone and calls Oracle. Babs tells him she had ran a blood test on the Talon that tried to kill her, and it's personal. And we see Oracle's computer screen and it's a DNA match for James Gordon Jr. I think that Talon attack on Barbara was clear back in the first issue, or at least it felt like a long time ago, to come circle back around to this.
Yeah, I knew that the Court of Owls were a part of this, Drew, but this is another one that I think I feel like has been hurt by the shipping delays. And also, let's be real, the fact that half of the issues have not actually done anything with the main story. I've forgotten some of the details of this. When it popped up that Talon has the same DNA as Gordon's son, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I don't know. I think that's just, again, I don't think that would feel out of place if you were reading this story, you know, relatively close together. But the way that we've been reading it, some of that stuff has definitely gone in one ear and out the other, Drew.
And the fact that they try to drag it out in a series instead of doing a miniseries, I think it's done it some disservice, too.
Well, I just don't understand, Drew. Some of those first issues, I don't get. I almost feel like this series underwent like multiple versions of what it was supposed to be, because we started with this premise, and then it turned into, there were several issues in a row, Drew, where we basically just had mini stories and flashbacks that had nothing to do with the main arc. And then we're back to the, I almost wonder if this, if they were conflicted on what they wanted to do with this book. And I don't know. I was just trying to speculate, but it's been very bizarrely put together, I've thought.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you on that. And then we also had the Punchline backup story in this, Chapter 9. Dr. Tompkins and Harper realize that Punchline knows Harper is Bluebird. If Harper comes to the trial, then Punchline will be able to get a mistrial. Kelly tells Dr. Tompkins and Harper how Alexis was in high school, about the yearbook Alexis kept with circled faces, people who disappeared when Punchline was working for the Joker. Kelly tells about how she was picked up and kept in prison. Punchline deals with Orca and injects her with something for her betrayal. The farther we get in this story, the less and less I care about it.
They've dragged it on too long, Drew. It's taking too long to get to the point. I mean, you know that I was not a huge fan of the way over the top. How amazing of a criminal mastermind is Punchline. But beyond that, the plot was at least, there was something there, right? There was building up to this trial. You felt the unfairness of the criminal getting away with it. And then we've just sort of stagnated with this prison storyline. I don't know if that's because that's how long the writers want this story to be. If they're being told, we're going to do 16 issues of this Joker thing, you've got to figure out how to make this story last 16 issues. I don't know. It's just, it is definitely overstayed its welcome. When you compare it, Drew, obviously it's different writers, but you compare it to the Justice League Dark backup, which has kept the story moving forward. And yes, it is, that whole backup has dealt with the threat of Merlin, right? But it's kept the story moving forward. We're not still stuck. We're not still in Atlantis fighting Merlin. The story has continued to progress, whereas this one is just, it's spinning its wheels. It's the Supergirl TV show of comics.
Great analogy. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Black Manta number 3, Devil Ray's Lair. The Rock allows targets to be destroyed by using aquakinetic astral projection. The drawback is that it causes strain on the mind and body. Black Manta is detected trying to access the Orichalcum. Black Manta convinces the gentleman ghost to take him back to ancient Atlantis, days before the sinking. Elder Roe checks to see if the ships are ready for evacuation. They are returning to the land of the first weapon masters of Atlantis. In Themyscira, Queen Nubia wishes Orisha safe travels as she and her beasts fly over the ocean. Black Manta and Gallus are flying over Ethiopia when Orisha attacks their plane. Orisha states the stones around her neck freed her and then led her to Black Manta. Orisha states she can feel their power in her head, eating away at her sanity, and Orisha attacks them both. In Atlantis, the Council of Atlantis discuss if Devil Ray is real or just another of Black Manta's tricks, a red herring. When the Council realizes none of its members were the ones that called the meeting, Devil Ray appears, stating he called the meeting. Devil Ray wanted to test his new weapon, a poison. Devil Ray promises that the people of Atlantis will take their final breath. Now, I wish it didn't take us all the way to issue number 3 to learn that that guy's name was Devil Ray. So, I know I remember being confused in the first issue on who that dude was, and I wouldn't have been able to tell you his name for the last two issues until this issue. They started using his name enough that I realized who that guy is. Basically a Black Manta wannabe, from what I gather.
Yeah, he was dressed very similar to Black Manta in that final scene.
Yes, he was. Their costumes are so close that a normal person would mistake him for Black Manta.
I'm intrigued by a lot of stuff that they're doing in this issue, Drew, but very similar to the animated Justice League comic, it's kind of bouncing around a lot, and it's hard for me to keep the thread of what the story is. It's a little bit more focused, to be clear. Like, it's clear that Devil Ray is the threat of the story, and it's centered around this Aura Calcum that they found. But we were like, we're going back in time, and it was really kind of unclear what they actually accomplished with that trip, Drew. Like, I know you get this flashback, and you see that these people leave Atlantis, and then it just shows the entire continent of Africa. It's like, there's not, like, a specific place in Africa they go to. It's just the whole massive, massive continent of Africa. I don't know. I'm enjoying this, Drew. I wish they could just, like, make some of these things tie together a little bit cleaner.
The other thing is the cover is now saying Prelude to Aquaman. I'm wondering how this is going to tie into that storyline title also. I'm sure it's going to come together at some point, but like you said, it's kind of jumping all over the place at the moment. And like you said, I don't understand why it was so important for Black Manta to visit ancient Atlantis. I don't know what he got out of that. They didn't make it clear. There is some interesting stuff going on, though, so.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I'm very intrigued by the stuff that they're introducing, this idea of some of the Atlanteans leaving. Like, all that is interesting to me, Drew. I wish the story was doing a better job tying these interesting things together better.
Some of the Atlanteans leaving, that's probably the reason why we're seeing Atlantean DNA and mixed in with human DNA out there in the world. I'm sure that has to do with that. So,
absolutely.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Titans United number 3. The Dark Side of the Moon. Blackfire has Connor captured. She runs some scans on him before letting her electronic dog attack him. Manside private airfield in California. The Titans are hunting down Lady Vic. Lady Vic gets into her plane while her two bodyguards transform into green wolves and attack Raven. Donna takes out the stewardesses who are using automatic weapons while Red Hood grapples the plane. Raven teleports the green wolves back to Nightwing and Beast Boy. Donna and Raven chase after Red Hood, who's holding on for dear life behind the plane. Raven helps Red Hood onto the plane where Lady Vic starts pounding on him. Red Hood and Lady Vic fight. When Red Hood asks her about Cadmus, Lady Vic tucks on her diamond earrings and teleports away. Nightwing has analyzed the source of the trigger. Operation Safeguard may have originated on Earth, but the signal is coming from space. Blackfire is zapping Connor with some sort of red energy.
Beyond this comic existing because the Titans show is on right now and is popular, I don't get this comic, Drew. What is Blackfire doing with Superboy or Connor? What is she doing? She has them all tied up, and then she lets the dog attack him, and then what is happening? And there's so much stuff, Drew, where they just like our things are happening. Red Hood randomly is grappling onto an airplane, like that's a thing that a human can do. Drew, I was rolling my eyes a lot as I was reading this story.
I could see Batman grappling a plane. I think I have seen that before.
Right, okay, but like, usually he doesn't. Jason was just riding behind the plane that way. I feel like we've seen Batman do that and then quickly get onto the plane.
That's true. That's very true. He usually gets on the. He would get on the plane, not be flapping
Jason
behind.
Just grappled on and then just was like, "All right, this is just what I'm doing now. I'm going to fly the entire way, just holding on to this grappling hook."
I don't know what they're doing with this title because plainly on the cover it says talks about watching Titans on HBO. But you've got Blackfire on the show, seems to be a good guy for now, but definitely in this comic, she's a bad guy. I mean, she's doing the opposite on the show with Connor than she's doing here in the comic. And then we got Red Hood, who's the villain on the show, who's part of the team here. So, it's weird.
I'm pretty disappointed in this comic, Drew, because I understand why you want to have a comic out because of Titans, but like maybe try just a little harder to have the comic be good. I don't know. That's just me.
I'm not going to argue with you. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Last Ride number 7. John's consciousness has been trapped in Darkseid's pit. John's consciousness is able to use the Owen energy to create a form to fight Darkseid. Superman's blood is infected with kryptonite. Cyborg Superman is charging Superman with two kryptonite daggers. Batman tackles Cyborg Superman, planting an explosive device on him. Superman uses his heat vision to activate the explosive, taking out Hank Henshaw. One of Cyborg Superman's kryptonite daggers is lodged in Batman's chest below his bat symbol. Darkseid is charging his boom nukes with green energy. He plans to send them to Earth and create a new wasteland. Wonder Woman wakes up to find Lobo has finished the task he was hired to do. So Wonder Woman cuts off his head with her sword. Darkseid is about to launch his boom nukes when Hal Jordan shows up. John removes the kryptonite dagger from Batman's chest. Superman and Wonder Woman both hit Darkseid with an uppercut. Darkseid tries to escape, but Hal Jordan hits Darkseid with all the boom nukes. 1 month later, in the United Planets Assembly, Lobo is on trial. The United Planets recognizes Apocalypse as New Oa. For now, Hal Jordan and John Stewart will be leading the Corps with Martian Manhunter as their new guardian. Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman talk about the future and decide the Justice League is needed, and they decided that their Justice League is the Justice League Universal.
I want to start my comments by saying I do not think that this is a bad issue. I am, however, disappointed in how this story ended because we had such interesting world building, Drew. And I think this is a good example of sometimes what you would get with superhero comics and some superhero movies, where you get this really interesting story, really interesting world building, and then it all just kind of, it's a big fight at the end that kind of anticlimactically wraps everything up with a neat little bow, and then the story's over. There were so many interesting things going on, Drew, and then they just nuke Darkseid and the story's over.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they did.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a little, it's a letdown. It is. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not cool. The fight wasn't cool. It was. And I thought the storytelling was fine in this issue. I don't know. Is it greedy to want a little bit more than that? A little more nuance? I don't know. Again, it's not bad, and it is very reflective, I think, of some, you know, big event comics that you get, you know, some of the big blockbuster superhero movies is sort of what you get. You get these interesting worlds and stories, and then it's just a big CGI fight, and then the story's over. And this was the comic version of that.
Yeah, pretty much. I was kind of surprised. I mean, when I read through it, I wasn't expecting it to be the last issue. I guess I should have probably realized that from the number on the issue, but I didn't pay that much attention to it. I started reading it, and I was like, oh, this is wrapping up. So I was kind of surprised it just wrapped up. So, and like you said, it's kind of anticlimactic with the big old boom nukes destroying Darkseid. So, and I wasn't expecting Hal Jordan to show back up. I thought he was dead. They didn't really explain that either.
No, that's the thing. Like, it was just so concerned with having this big fight and all the big moments of Hal Jordan shows up and helps save the day. And that's cool. It is. It is objectively cool. But like you said, they don't explain a lot with that. There's not, the nuance leaves. There had been so much nuance, Drew. There was so much setup. Like 5/7 of this story was literally just backstory and setup. And then it literally ultimately just came down to one big fight with Darkseid.
Yep. And don't forget Wonder Woman lopping off Lobo's head. I like the fact that somebody said we should have just done that at the beginning. Because honestly, it didn't kill him. So.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman Urban Legends number 9. The first story we have is Disinformation Campaigning, part 2 of 2. Red Alice has returned to the religion of crime. She asks her followers to find the woman who calls herself the Anti-Oracle, the Seer. A hologram of Seer appears behind Beth. Magistrate peacekeepers come to take Red Alice. Red Alice's followers turn her over to the peacekeepers. Batwoman crashes through a skylight and fights alongside of Red Alice. Batwoman realizes that Seer is in Simon Saint's office aboard the Magistrate's airship. Batwoman calls Oracle and Nightwing to tell them of her discovery, something they figured out in the last issue of Nightwing. I gotta tell you, Cletus, the whole Red Alice thing and the religion of crime, I don't know if I was supposed to know about that before, but it all felt new to me.
I know so little about that character, Drew. I have no idea. I will say the religion of crime, though, I am familiar with because that's Inner Gang. And at certain points, like in Final Crisis, that led up to Darkseid. So that part was familiar to me. Red Alice's story and involvement of that meant nothing to me.
Yeah, and apparently she was supposed to be in charge of them or something. I don't know. It was just strange. And I honestly wasn't really interested in this story. I think the only purpose it was in here for was for Batwoman to tell Oracle and Nightwing that Seer is on board the Magistrate airship, which they already found out in Nightwing. So, all right. The next story we had in this was Tweedledee and Tweedledum in Down the Rabbit Hole. March visits Tweedledee and Tweedledum, who've made some green in the last heist with Mad Hatter. Something is wrong with Tweedledee. March states that they should have him checked out. And Tweedledum tries to get medicine at the pharmacy, but is told that he needs a prescription. So Tweedledee needs to see a doctor. Tweedledum takes his cousin to the Gotham City Urgent Care, and they won't see him without insurance or an ID. Tweedledee passes out in the middle of the street, and it's to be continued. And when I read this, Cletus, I was like, why are we focusing on a Tweedledee and Tweedledum story? What's the point of the story? I honestly didn't really care.
That's fair, Drew, but it was also the one I liked by far the most in this. Because it's at least doing, I don't know, I found it was doing something interesting. When have you ever read a Tweedledee and Tweedledum story?
Never when it's focused on them. I mean, I've seen them fight against Batman before, but it's never been focused on them when we're getting stuff from their perspective.
Right, well, especially because they're henchmen, right? They're not the main, they're never the main bad guys. What the things I liked about this story, Drew, is it's focusing on maybe why henchmen do the things they do, right? That, like, he's got the money and nobody will give him the medicine. Nobody will help treat his brother. What's he going to do? He's going to turn to crime. I found that interesting. I found the obvious metaphor towards our healthcare system was interesting. I don't know. I agree with you. It doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but I kind of like that because I don't need another Fear State story.
Oh, we definitely don't need another one of those. I guess that was a nice break from that.
I found it interesting because I thought the story was well told, unlike some of the other ones that are in this issue. And it was new. It was different. I've never read a Tweedledee and Tweedledum story. And it wasn't even just like, you know, kind of like a silly, they try to attempt a heist and it goes poorly because they're stupid. Like, it was interesting. It was the human element. I don't know, Drew. I think you got to give this story another chance.
Well, I will next issue when we read the next part of it. We also had Azrael in Dark of the Soul Part 2. John Paul's patient starts coughing up blood. John Paul tells him not to be afraid because we are at the dawn of the world to come. The resurrections have begun and Christ is returning. Azrael is convinced the end times are here. He's waiting for the signs as the seven seals are open. And when that doesn't happen, Azrael seeks out Bullet Tooth to prove he is right. Azrael freaks out when he finds Bullet Tooth's body and he is not risen. Azrael asks God for a sign and finds an address. When Azrael gets to a church, he finds a scientist who is waiting for Bullet Tooth. The scientist has synthesized an artificial version of the Lazarus Pit that only lasts a few hours. A woman shows up and tells Azrael that this scientist is no agent of heaven and neither are you. And I was very curious who that woman was, because I didn't recognize her from the artwork.
Yeah, you're asking the wrong person, Drew. You know I don't know that era of Batman very well, so if it's supposed to be a pre-existing character, I do not know.
I don't know who that was either. I wish like Azrael would have said, "Oh, you're blah, blah, blah," so we'd know who it was, but apparently we're supposed to know who it is. I have no clue. So we'll have to wait till next issue, I'm guessing, to find out who she is. Then the final story in this issue was Outsiders in the Fearful Finale. Red Robin shows up and gives the Signal a rebreather to save him from Scarecrow's gas. He also brought extras for the rest of the Outsiders. Red Robin tells Clown Hunter that he has planted a tracer on Jonah. Red Robin meets with the Outsiders and forms a plan to stop Jonah Winfield. Katana tracks down Jonah, but finds Scarecrow is also after him. Jonah runs. Black Lightning frightens Jonah with his lightning. Jonah runs right into Clown Hunter's trap, and the Signal injects Jonah with a cure. The introduction to Red Robin in this story did not really help it that much. as much as I like Tim Drake, it didn't help this story that much.
I'm gonna be honest, Drew. I definitely glazed through this one, so I have very little to add to it.
I don't blame you. I mean, I paid more attention to it because for my notes, but I, honestly, the first one wasn't that great, and the wrap up to it was not that much better. It was confusing, is what it was, and I think they could have done a better job of trying to tell it. Because part of its problem was you had them telling the story in the past, and also trying to tell it in the future too. They had some stuff with Duke Thomas in the future that I didn't really think we needed in there, and especially in this issue, but they threw it in there anyways. Anyways, I think they could have done a better job with that story, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Something that would have held my attention would have been welcome.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Action Comics 1036. Superman has reached out to the United Planets for aid in rescuing slaves from Warworld. When the Lord Premier hears the words Phalosians, he flips out and tells his aide to never speak that word again. Superman has obviously not asked for aid, and you are to tell no one that he has done so. Superman and the Authority arrive at Warworld. Little satellites are orbiting the planet, which contain dead bodies and writings in a strange language. A flare in the symbol of the House of El lights up the sky and grabs their attention. There is some sort of tomb or memorial where a man is waiting for them in a blue hood. Superman states he is just a projection and he's not here to fight, just talk. Superman recognizes him as being in Mongol's throne room in issue 1035 of Action Comics. The stranger in a blue hood states that he knows the Phalosians better than anyone living, and Mongol has gathered many of them together this very day to lead you to him. If you seek Mongol, follow the dead. Superman arrives at the stadium with the broken head of a Mongol statue. Superman addresses the crowd, stating, "No matter what Mongol has told you, we are not your enemy." The oldest war zoon, Shaitil, addresses Superman and reveals the champions of Mongol: teacher, mother, orphan, darling, and the unmade. Superman is engulfed in magic and his true self is revealed. Superman is radiation poisoned and his powers have been fading for months. Enchantress has been juicing him back up with her magic, and Manchester Black has been using illusions to make it look like he's stronger than he is. Mongol appears and tells Superman his bones will adorn my banner spear for 1,000,000 years. Now, we had talked about how Superman had looked old and all of a sudden was looking younger again, and they used the fact that Enchantress, you know, had been creating an illusion to make him look younger and stronger, but I can't see them following him all over the place doing that. You know what I mean?
No, that felt like a really nice retcon to be like, oh no, this is why he looked old in the Grant Morrison story, but then didn't look old, but now does look old again. I was like, okay, sure.
I know. I thought that was kind of lame too.
I will say, I mean, It's ridiculous, but I will say I appreciated it. They at least tried to give a reason for it, so you can just kind of move on. Going into the issue as a whole, I thought there was a lot of pressure on this issue, Drew, because there's been so much setup for this story. We've had John's story, the lead up to Superman leaving. We had the Grant Morrison miniseries leading up to this. There's been a lot of stuff leading up to this big Superman story. And if you kind of, I don't know, don't stick the landing on the first issue, I think you start to raise some questions of like, what was all this for? But this was good, Drew. I'm very, very intrigued to read the next part of this story.
I am too. I thought that was set up pretty well. I mean, it makes the Future State storyline they did look terrible. I know we've said this 1,000 times now. They just should have never done the Future State storylines and just went into the storyline. We didn't really need to have that.
I agree completely with you, Drew. It ruins the mystery that's been going on. Now, obviously not, like, clearly the story has branched off significantly at this point, but we wouldn't even know that this was a thing that could happen or have an idea of how poorly it could potentially go. We could have just done it. And I think that would have been more interesting than the like weird sneak preview thing that Future State turned into.
I agree with you on that.
But I have to say, I like this story. I really want to read the next issue of this. I'm impressed by DC, because if I'm being honest with you, Drew, I really expected them to drop the ball.
Yeah, same here. And this is better than what I was expecting. Lame reveal about the Enchantress illusion thing, but that's beside the point. It's a pretty good story so far. We also had a backup in this, Tales of Metropolis story featuring Guardian. Guardian is interrogating the kid who states that Dismember makes him have everyone turn on their phones to power the Ouija and then takes them. Guardian asks to have Dismember take him. When Dismember takes Guardian, he is transported to some digital world. Guardian demands that Dismember quits playing games and show him the children. And Guardian uses an EMP and Dismember is revealed to be Julius. After the EMP, Julius is stuck in both worlds, and the children are freed. Guardian and Jimmy Olsen team up for more adventures. The end. They still, in this issue, did not mention that was Jimmy Olsen, but it clearly looked like him.
Yeah.
Another terrible backup, if you ask me.
Yeah. It's disappointing, because I do like that they do backups. I think that the concept is good, and that they should continue doing them, but I would love it if they put a little bit more effort into them. Would be nice.
You know what would be a good backup for the Superman story? I think, you know, some of those Jimmy Olsen, those funny Jimmy Olsen stories we got? Yeah. That would work perfect as backup with this. You know, you have the seriousness of the main story, and then you get something funny in the backup. I just think that would work well here.
I agree. I do. You probably have to get a different writer, though, because even if you could convince Matt Fraction to write a backup story, I think his price tag would be a little bit high for a backup story.
That's true. Hey, you can still get somebody else to do a funny Jimmy Olsen backup story.
That is true.
Maybe not the same caliber as Matt Fraction, but still.
You know what? Another good option, since I think he is just on the DC payroll already. I mean, obviously, I don't know his exact contract, but getting Russell, who did the Future State Superman and Lex thing, and has done, you know, the Wonder Twins and some of the other stuff, that would be good. Get him on a backup story.
Oh, I totally agree with you. That would be awesome.
And he could do, I mean, he'd be well suited to doing some sort of satire with Jimmy or anybody, or even continuing that Planet Lexor story in a backup. Like, I don't know. He might be a little bit too big of a writer to be doing a backup too, but they've got V doing the Justice League Dark backup. So I don't know. Anything would be better than this.
That's true. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Wonder Woman number 781. Wonder Woman is having lunch with Eda Candy when they spot Dr. Psycho on television. Dr. Psycho is talking about a book he wrote titled The Delusion. Eda gets a call from Steve Trevor and has to go. Diana states seeing Steve again is a priority, but there's just so much right now that can't be put on hold. Diana tells Eda not to tell Steve that they had lunch together. Diana doesn't want Steve to think that she's avoiding him, but she is.
Yeah, she definitely is. She definitely, like, oh, stuff always comes up, Drew. That's part of being Wonder Woman, being Superman, being Batman. There's always something. So that was what I liked about that, Drew, is that clearly the character Wonder Woman is saying this, but you can tell that the writer does not agree with what the character's saying.
Right. Wonder Woman finds Dr. Psycho leaving the television station. Diana wants an explanation of his actions in Asgard, but Psycho tells her his time in Asgard has nothing to do with her. Diana informs Psycho that he's on borrowed time. Diana's conversation with Dr. Psycho is cut short when someone cries for help. It's a man on the ledge at a construction site, and Wonder Woman discovers he's under Dr. Psycho's control. The man jumps, but Diana catches him by the arm with her lasso. Dr. Psycho tells Diana to stay out of his business or he'll make the other construction workers go splat. Wonder Woman cannot save them all. 3 days later in New England, Diana visits Deadman. She still has Siegfried's sword and she would like to return it. She calls it unfinished business. Deadman locates Siegfried's body and the two decide to travel there. Later that evening, Steve Trevor gets a visit from Wonder Woman. She grabs Steve around the neck and starts choking him. Then she throws him through a sliding glass window. Steve quickly learns that this is not Wonder Woman. Steve shoots the pretender and she shatters like glass. Steve calls the last number he has for Diana and leaves her a voicemail. Dr. Psycho visits a man who gives him a guitar case. We have no idea what's inside it, but when Psycho leaves, the money he gave the guy is only blank paper. Diana and Boston take a plane. It's a 9-hour flight because Diana wants to sit and think for a bit. And as she's staring out the window, Diana sees a dozen Wonder Woman flying next to her plane.
Very interesting, Drew. I've been very curious to see what the new era, so to speak, of Wonder Woman's going to be. Like, what's the first story they're going to go with? And Dr. Psycho's story is exciting. I know we saw him pop up in her time in Asgard. This is... I'm very intrigued, and I liked how slimy he felt, right? Like, not only just her actual interaction with him, but then the threat to make all those construction workers jump was good stuff, Drew. It's good writing.
Yeah, I really like it. The fact they're using Dr. Psycho right now, because he's on the Harley Quinn animated series, I think it's smart to put him in Wonder Woman comics right now too, because some of that audience could migrate over to the Wonder Woman comic to learn more about, or you know, follow more about Psycho. So I just think it's a good time to be using him in Wonder Woman also.
And what I like about that, Drew, is you're probably right in that the decision to use him may be tied into his appearance on the show. But what I like is that, unlike the Titans comic, they're not just doing it just to do it, right? Like, he's not just the joke character that he is on the TV show, which, to be clear, I like that version of him. But they're doing their version, right, of Dr. Psycho in a way that works for the story, and it's not just pandering to people that want to see a certain character. I'm very impressed by the storytelling of this book so far.
It was smart of them to set up Psycho during when Wonder Woman was in the Godsphere, setting him up for him to revisit him now that she's back on Earth. It makes it very interesting. We also had a backup story in this called What Lies Beneath Part 1. Three women have traveled to the fortress of Bana Middle demanding an audience with the Amazons. They want to join their ranks because they are tired of being victims of abuse. Queen Farika tells the women they must fight to the death. Two of the women reach for pistols, but the third woman grabs a staff. She refuses to kill a woman that wants the same freedom she desires. The woman who chose the staff passed the test. The other women are sent away. They are given a tea that will erase their memories of the last week and some money to get them wherever they wish to go. Later, there's a reception for the Amazon's newest member, Yaa Asatawea. The reception is cut short when the fortress is under attack from a monster, a lion with bat wings and a scorpion tail that is better known as a manticore, and it's to be concluded. Now, I got to tell you, Cletus, I really like this backup story. It focuses on the Amazons I'm not as familiar with at Banna Middle, and I also found it very interesting. They actually have two queens. I don't remember if I'd seen that before.
Yeah, I don't know either, Drew, but I agree with you. I definitely enjoyed this story as well. Like you said, focusing on a different group of Amazons that I don't know a lot about, Drew, and so I was under the impression that they were a little more warlike, just based on what Artemis is like. I just kind of assumed that she was similar to her sisters. And so seeing this initiation ceremony and peace being the option makes sense with what I know about Amazons, right? I was like, well, yeah, that definitely jives. But I was a little bit surprised because it wasn't the Amazons on Themyscira. So very cool.
I think one of the things I'm very curious to learn is why we have this different faction than the ones from Themyscira. I'm hoping I know it's not going to be explored in this backup, but I'd like it to see it explored in the main title at some point. Because we know we're getting this big storyline between Themyscira, Banna Middle, and Yara Flor. And I'm very curious about the different factions of Amazons, why they're split and not together, and I'm hoping they explore that more.
I think they will. I get the feeling that I'm really enjoying the serious commitment to world building that DC's doing with the Wonder Woman lore. It's very cool.
Yeah, it is. It really is. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Of the myriad pop culture podcasts, there is one that blends in with them all, flying under the radar, nagging at you at a subconscious level. Nerd Bliss, where four hosts from the deep south and anyone they can get to appear for store brand coffee and corn nuts talk about science fiction, pop culture, current affairs, and more. You can find us at nerdblisspodcast.com or on the ESO network. Nerd Bliss. It's one word.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 6, Episode 18, Truth or Consequences. The episode opens up with William telling the Super Friends that Otis informed him that Lex is building an entire army of Lexo-suits for Nixley. Lena states that she can create a program to track Lex's suits. William is not happy when he learns that Andrea has leaked Lex's personal journal with love letters to Nixley to the media using his name as a byline. Brainy learns from the Legion of Superheroes that in the future, Lex and Nixley complete the Allstone and proclaim themselves the King and Queen of the Universe. When the Allstones begin to fail for unknown reasons, the Legion takes the opportunity to attack the couple, and Nixley dies. When Lena's program discovers the location of Mitch's ship, the Super Friends show up. Supergirl, Brainy, Dreamer, and Martian Manhunter get sucked through a dream portal created by Nixley. Brainy manages to grab the Hope Totem before he is sucked through. Dreamer uses her powers to guide the group back to the tower. Esme gets made fun of at school and she reacts by accidentally blowing up paint. While cleaning the paint off of Esme, Alex and Kelly find what looks like a rose tattoo on Esme's back. Brainy has a conversation with another Brainy that the Big Brain has suffered serious damage and he has ordered the return to the 31st century to merge with it. Merging with the Big Brain will result in Brainy ceasing to exist. Lex and Nixley find the Truth Totem. Nixley activates the gauntlet and passes by revealing she wants someone close to her who won't betray her. Lena finds Mitch's ship again. Supergirl is surprised attacked by Nixley and Lex. John gets surprised attacked by Mitch. The battle results in the ship suffering too much damage. Lex and Nixley escape as the ship self-destructs. Supergirl reclaims the Hope Totem when her and John escape. While the others are away celebrating at the bachelorette party, William and Esme are baking cookies. William has Esme hide. He notices the security system is offline. Lex interrogates William while Nixley searches for Esme. Seeking revenge for the journals, Lex shoots William and reveals he has arranged William's meeting with Otis and tricked Lena into affecting the tower's computer with a Trojan virus. The virus delayed Esme's test results, which would have told the Super Friends about her totem status. Alex gets a text at the bachelorette party informing her that Esme's blood has fifth-dimensional magic. Alex theorizes that Esme has somehow become the love totem. Andrea receives the video of Lex shooting William as the Super Friends return to the tower. Supergirl finds William bleeding out on the floor, but he's already dead, and the others cannot find Esme anywhere. Now, one of the things I liked about this episode, Cletus, was the fact, was William's story in this, and how Andrea's consequences of revealing Lex's journal affected him at the end of the episode where he's shot. And we're actually seeing some consequences that I have a feeling that William's story is done here.
On a different show, I would agree, Drew, on Supergirl, where they really want to put a nice bow on everything at the end of this season. I don't know. We'll see.
With William having a death here, it feels like we have some stakes for once. Or if he doesn't die, then that's going to kind of erase the stakes kind of thing. Same thing as I said about Hank last on Titans last week, when I thought they might be bringing him back, but they didn't, which I was happy with. If William comes back after this, I'm not, you know, it's not going to feel, the stakes aren't going to feel there.
Oh, I agree with you, Drew. I'm just saying I don't totally trust that the show won't still do that.
Yeah, I'm afraid you might be right on that, too.
I'm not saying bringing him back would be the right or smart choice. I'm just saying that I think the show will make that choice. One thing I found interesting in this, Drew, was Lex seems to finally convince Nixley completely that he really is in love with her and just wants, you know, the two of them to rule the universe together. And there's a moment where he appears to me, Drew, where he has a moment to embrace her and instead redirects her attention. And that felt subtle but intentional. And I obviously, you're supposed to mistrust Lex always, but that was a very interesting moment to me where I was like, I always assume you're lying, but I'm fairly certain you're lying.
You can never trust Lex's intentions. Even though he's feeling pretty truthful towards her most of the time, but I've always wondered, I've always had that in the back of my mind. Does he really love Nixley? Or does he love the power Nixley has?
Well, and he is intentionally, it seems like he's intentionally set up all of the totems to get captured by the Super Friends. And I don't know if he's doing that because he's then going to, once the Super Friends collect all of them, they then take them back for both? Or is he trying to keep them out of Nixley's hands and take it for himself later, where he's not taking it from Nixley, but taking it from the Super Friends? I don't know, Drew. He's up to something.
Yes, that's for sure. And we'll be finding out soon, because there's only two episodes left of Supergirl, so we're getting towards the end. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Stargirl, Season 2, Episode 13, Summer School, Chapter 13. Beth and Dr. McKnighter learn that Eclipso has Beth's parents trapped in an illusion and it's draining their life force. Jenny has a vision that Courtney is possessed by Eclipso. Stargirl, Wildcat, Cindy, and Pat all arrive at the American Dream. Pat goes to find Beth and McKnighter. Courtney tries to zap the Eclipso boy with her staff, but he keeps teleporting away. Yolanda ends up fighting the original Wildcat, and Cindy fights a younger version of herself. And Pat ends up fighting another Pat. Eclipso tells Courtney he's going to merge the Shadowlands and the Earth. He will then be able to consume all of humanity at once. Then he will become a god. Beth tells Courtney where the real Eclipso is, and Courtney blasts Eclipso with the staff. The original Wildcat, the younger Cindy, and the copycat Pat all disappear. Rick is unable to get the hourglass working. He grabs his costume and goes to help fight Eclipso anyways. The Thunderbolt returns to the garage with Chinese food. Jakeem wishes they had the part to fix the robot with. Mike shows up flying the robot. He punches Eclipso into a car. Next, Mike uses a giant chainsaw to try and cut Eclipso in half. Then Mike uses a flamethrower on Eclipso. Jakeem wishes that the Thunderbolt would electrocute Eclipso, and Eclipso grabs the Thunderbolt and throws him into the robot, shorting it out. Rick shows up, but Eclipso taunts him that he doesn't have super strength. Blockbuster charges at Eclipso like a bull and sends him flying. Eclipso is able to stop Blockbuster by blasting a hole in his chest. Eclipso grabs Pat and starts breaking his arm. Eclipso gets Courtney to say that she hates Eclipso, and Courtney has embraced the darkness, and Eclipso is able to possess her. With red glowing eyes and a staff that is now glowing purple, Eclipso has the power of darkness and light. He can now merge the worlds into one. With Eclipso merging the world, the Shade is able to return. As a bonus, the Shade saves Best Parents. Yolanda tries to stop Eclipso and steal the staff, but fails. The original Starman shows up and fights Eclipso for the control of the staff. Starman tells Courtney to fight Eclipso. Pat encourages Courtney to be herself, and Courtney breaks free of Eclipso. Courtney and Jenny blast Eclipso with light. Jakeem wishes Eclipso was toast, and Eclipso is transformed into a piece of toast. Starman is not here to take back the staff, but he is offered to train Courtney. Beth tells Dr. McNider where to find his wife and the 10-year-old son he didn't know he had. Mike and Jakeem decide they want to form their own superhero team. Cindy asks Yolanda if she can join the JSA. Yolanda got a pass, and Cindy states that she wants a pass too. The Shade tells Rick that it is ironic that the beast that killed his parents, he now mourns. The Shade also tells Rick that Grundy has a habit of coming back. You just have to bury him in the right place at the right time. And the Shade also tells Rick that he's staying in Blue Valley. Best parents are very excited to have a daughter that is a superhero, so the divorce is now off. The Crocs bought the house next door to the Dugans. And next season, Stargirl Frenemies is coming in 2022. The Helix Institute for Youth Rehabilitation. So we see that Mr. Bones is interested in a town where heroes and villains live together.
Pretty good final episode, Drew. I was not surprised that the original Starman popped up during the fight, just because they had made a point to introduce him earlier in the season. I'm very curious what that's, because we know that they've added that character as a full-time character next season. I'm really curious what that's going to be like. Is he going to be a mentor? Is there something else going on? I don't know. I'm intrigued.
It felt like he was going to be a mentor. It also felt like he had an ulterior motive for coming to Blue Valley. Not necessarily to take back the staff, but I think there's something, he has some sort of unfinished business. At least that's the feeling I got. Now, I wanted to get, because we talked about this last week, I was wanting to get your opinion on how they used Mike and Jakeem in this episode.
I think it was pretty good, Drew, and I maintain, given how this worked, that Jakeem should have been introduced sooner, because the dynamic plays well there. They talked about how Mike had been lonely, right? He didn't really have a friend, and then Jakeem also was lonely because the Thunderbolt went to him next. I don't get it, Drew. I don't get why they waited so long to do this. It gives both characters something to do by having them together.
They have a great dynamic together, too. And I'm wondering, because we saw Mike in the robot this season, I wonder if we're going to start seeing Mike in the robot instead of Pat. I know they mentioned in this they wanted to start their own superhero team. I honestly don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to see them tagging along with the JSA more. And, you know, they're going to be the comedy relief, honestly.
Right, which is fine, but it works better when there's a couple of them, because then one guy doesn't have to be the comedy relief always, as we've seen with Cisco in Flash. When you rely on just one character, when they're not doing that, it sticks out. So I liked it a lot, Drew, but it really reinforced my opinion that they should have done it sooner.
Yeah. The other thing I could see them doing, besides tagging along and helping the JSA, they may have having some of their own adventures too. So they might do that as well. I was very surprised to see the Shade come back. I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, I agree. The one thing I will say, it's sort of to do with the Shade, was the part of the Shadow World whatever that glob remnants that got into Jade. I know it's what gave her the vision of what Eclipso wanted to do with Court. But I thought, I mean, I thought they were going to do something and that was going to give Obsidian his powers. And I still think that might be the case at some point. But they didn't really do anything beyond that with that glob. I don't know. Part of me wonders if we're going to see that again, that will pop up again next season, or if that's just going to kind of be a red herring nothing. I don't know.
I think it's going to pop up next season. I think one of the reasons why they're bringing in Mr. Bones, and we're going to be that part of the story is going to be following Obsidian and what's going on with her brother. I think that's where they're going with this. They're going to be introducing Obsidian. I don't know if they're intending Mr. Bones to be the big bad next season or not. I'm not really sure what the focus is going to be. I mean, they're calling it frenemies, but who's going to be the big bad next season? I was confused by that.
It seems like it might be Bones, but he's not always antagonistic, so I don't know. I don't know, Drew. Maybe there isn't. Maybe it's not. I would not be opposed, Drew, if there wasn't a big major villain that is the focus of the season. If instead it's more of a slice of life kind of thing, and then there's some middle villain that emerges later in the year. I would not be opposed to that. It would kind of help, I think, keep the show fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right on that. Anyways, I thought this was a good wrap-up to the season, and I'm definitely excited about next season. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Titans, Season 3, Episode 10, Troubled Water. The water supply has been contaminated with Scarecrow's toxin. People are drinking it, and chaos is spreading across the city. Crane sends out a message to Gotham City stating that Nightwing is the one that poisoned the water. He's a criminal, and a $50,000 reward will be paid to the person that brings him in, dead or alive. And a new hero will rise, and his name is Red Hood. Lydia finds Donna and wants to put her through a test before she can return to the world of men. Donna passes her test, then Donna heads to Gotham. Molly calls Jason and asks him to pack up his crap and leave Gotham with her, but Jason refuses. Dick talks to the rest of the Titans. They decide to turn themselves over to the GCPD. The cops start roughing them up, so the Titans fight back. Blackfire gets shot. Starfire tries to heal Blackfire, but Blackfire steals her powers. Barbara turns in her weapon and badge for firing on another cop to save Nightwing, and then she is arrested. Garth got shot with a knockout dart and is having problems staying awake when Rachel appears. Nightwing and Connor do not know where the rest of the Titans are. Communications are down, and the Titans are divided and on the run. Crane and Jason go to Wayne Manor. Crane toasts their victory, and Crane has Jason destroy a painting of the Wayne family. Crane states, "Welcome to Crane Manor." Now, I gotta tell you, Cletus, when Dick came up with the idea of turning themselves over to the GCPD, I was like, that's a dumb idea, guys. And we saw that payoff right in this episode.
It was probably not the best idea, Drew, but I did have a hard time believing it would play out the way that it did. I mean, that's just escalated so unnecessarily by everybody. But like you said, it was probably inevitable that something like that would happen.
Yeah. So there was that. Then we had Blackfire steal Starfire's power. She said it wasn't intentional, but I have a feeling it was intentional. And maybe that was her plan all along. I'm curious to see where that goes.
I don't know that it was, Drew. I thought it was initially, too. But her reaction was fairly genuine. And also, if that was her plan, she has Starfire dead to rights right there. And that's what makes me think that it was legitimately not intentional. Because if her plan was to steal her powers and then presumably kill her, because why wouldn't you at that point? It's right there. There's literally nothing stopping her in that moment from acting on that.
Yeah, but on the other hand, she may have just wanted to steal her powers without killing her sister, so her sister would feel her sister would be around to see her take power too.
Yeah, but she killed their parents, though.
Hell, that's...
I don't know. You're making a good argument, too, Drew. I'm not saying you're necessarily wrong. I'm just saying, for me, I suspect that she is actually telling the truth, because if she wasn't, it was... There's nothing in that moment that was stopping her from just completing whatever her plan was and moving on.
That's true, and she hasn't really moved on, so...
She continues to offer to help. She does it. She and does nothing antagonistic at all. Not even a threat towards Corey. So I don't know. I don't know.
Guess we'll have to see on that one.
Yeah.
Barbara firing on another cop. I mean, she saved Nightwing, obviously, but I knew that wasn't going to be a good turn for her. She's arrested now.
That's colossally stupid on her part.
Yes. And I'm wondering if Dick is going to break her out of prison next. Because that feels like something he'd do.
It'd be super cool if we could get a storyline where she gets the chip in her back and we can get Batgirl. That's all I'm saying.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it? And it did not surprise me when we get to the end of the episode that Crane and Jason go to Wayne Manor. That just felt like a trophy moment for them. One that'll be short-lived, obviously.
Yeah, and the other thing I liked about that too, Drew, I really liked how in control he was again in this. Well, obviously, we had seen him lose control and kind of slip, and we saw the crazy side of Dr. Crane. And now he's back in control of his plan, and so we see him in control. He's calm and collected like we saw at the beginning of the season. And I'm enjoying that duality of the character. If you can see... ultimately why some of these Batman villains are the way they are, right? As soon as things start to slip, he slips and is a totally different person. I'm looking forward to seeing the other side of that again.
I'm curious if Bruce is going to come back before Scarecrow is defeated or after he's defeated to reclaim the mantle of the Bat. Because we know what's going to happen. And we know that he's going to pick up Tim as his partner. But I'm curious how they're going to do it, because... the whole thing with Bruce is you can't really put the dude in a costume. And, you know, they've been avoiding that. So is he going to be helpful in taking down Scarecrow or not? That's my big question.
I think probably not. I'd be really surprised if we got Batman on screen, Drew.
I mean, we won't get him in a costume. But is he going to help take down Scarecrow as Bruce, either being an advisor in the Batcave, or we might even see something... him doing something off screen, you know what I mean? As Batman.
Yeah, that's possible.
So I'm just curious, is he going to be helping take down Scarecrow, or is he going to come back after Scarecrow's defeated and kind of retake his place in Gotham? I'm interested in what's going to happen, and we're getting towards the end of Titans too, so I think we have three more episodes, so should be wrapping up soon. It'll be interesting to see what happens. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Why the Last Man, Season 1, Episode 8, Ready, Aim, Fire. Roxanne shoots Kate when she tries to leave the compound. Roxanne has the women target practicing on some mannequins, and Roxanne praises Hero and tells her she is a natural. Nora finds out that Roxanne is kicking them out because they are not their people. In a flashback scene, Roxanne enters a house with her gun drawn. She responds to shots fired, and she finds the house full of women. She tells them it's not safe to stay there. Roxanne is at MyPriceMax.com because she used to shop there. She originally was there to stop looters. She felt obligated to keep the peace. When the looters stopped coming around, Roxanne decided to stay there. At least that's what she tells the women. Roxanne learns that the house that the women were staying was a group home for domestic violence. Virginia, the group counselor, left the group house in the middle of the night without saying a word. Kate states she hated her. Roxanne says, "I like you, Kate," and Roxanne invites all the women to stay with her. Sam and Hero get into a fight. Roxanne tries to make Sam apologize to Hero, but he won't. Sam tries to leave in the middle of the night, and Roxanne makes sure he does leave. We get another flashback scene where Roxanne is dragging dead bodies into a pile. She tries to light them on fire, but the lighter is not working. Roxanne sees a horse and follows it back to a farm where she sees a big group of women. In the present, Hiro is crying after Sam leaves. Roxanne comforts Hiro and then brings her outside to an FU party. Roxanne has Hiro chuck Sam's hat in the fire. Then the girls dance and drink. While everyone's passed out, Nora takes lighter fluid and makes a trail to the warehouse and catches it on fire. In another flashback scene, Roxanne tries to dump a patrol car into the lake. Next, she is eating licorice and watching the farmhouse of women from afar. She sets up the warehouse to be inviting, and she also moves the semis to help be a barrier. Roxanne lies back out in the grass again, and Roxanne is the one who fires the gun to scare the women. Sam travels to a school where he runs into Mrs. Blackwell, Principal Blackwell. Nora has a hidden backpack with food, supplies, and a gun. Nora discovers the squad car in the lake. In another flashback scene, Roxanne is hiding in the MyPriceMax.com when a woman comes running in with a gun. A second woman comes running in with a gun. They kill each other. Roxanne takes the gun and starts shooting anyone that comes into the store. Nora confronts Roxanne about her communications problem. Nora makes a deal with Roxanne that she is part of the inner circle and that Nora and her daughter can eat first. In another flashback scene, Roxanne is the assistant manager at MyPriceMax.com, and she's getting a lecture because she's not allowed to fire people. Roxanne was trying to deal with a sexual harassment issue. Next, the manager tells Roxanne he has to put her on notice for stealing a box of Next, the manager tells Roxanne he has to put her on notice for stealing a box set of Law & Order Season 10. Roxanne gives a speech to the other women declaring the group the Daughters of the Amazons. Rereading that recap, Cletus, that episode jumped around a lot in the present and the past, but when you actually watch the episode, when you're watching the episode unfold, the way they did it, it revealed, I like how they revealed things about Roxanne's life, how she got to be leader of the group. Because it's all interesting because she set that whole thing up.
Well, and what I liked, Drew, is I really liked the way they worked backwards with the flashbacks. The first thing you get is her killing one of the other girls from her clan, so to speak, who's all wet. And at the time, I didn't really get why she was wet or what was going on with that. But by the end of the episode, I think she probably found the same thing that Nora finds, which is the police car full of the dead bodies, right? That's got to be why she's wet. She must have found that. And then we keep working backwards and you keep peeling layers off. And she doesn't even talk the same way. That's some really great acting from that actress, but like that's such a cool characteristic to give. Like she's a totally, totally different person. She has completely reinvented herself with this lie.
She has, and I love the way they revealed it in the episode. Like you said, they did the flashbacks going in reverse, and you get the reveal at the end, and she is really, she really set that all up to be leader of that group. You know, Nora's about to get kicked out. I like how she used what she found to get herself in the inner circle. And, you know, she's almost like a co-leader with Roxanne now. The other thing I was not surprised about was Sam leaving. I saw the writing on the wall with that one. And I knew Hiro wasn't going to go with her. You could just tell she's getting enthralled with Roxanne and what they have there. So I'm really sure that we're going to see Hiro take a more active role as a daughter of the Amazon. Because now we see that they're going to be calling themselves that, so.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that Sam left either. I didn't think we'd see him again after he left. But then we do see him at the school interacting with the principal. And I'm kind of curious it didn't feel like a final scene. You know what I mean? I felt like we're going to see Sam some more. So I'm interested to see what that looks like because I kind of, not knowing the comic, I thought that Sam was either going to get killed by the group or would leave inevitably, and that would be the last we'd see of him. So I'm interested, Drew. I'm very interested to see what they do with that character still.
I do too. And my gut tells me that Yorick and his group are going to come across him at some point. And that's the only reason I can think of that, you know, we saw Sam come across that teacher, is that York and his group's going to come across him at some point. On the other hand, we may see Hero come across him again at some point too. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. I really liked how this episode focused on Roxanne and the Daughters of the Amazon. We didn't bring in anything else that was going on with York or with the president or anything like that. I like how this just focused on that group and let us see what was going on there. Really like that.
I agree with you, Drew. Such a great episode. The framing of telling the story backwards with her was super cool. I really liked that. Yeah, the only other thing I have to add is, please somebody pick this show up. It is so good.
Totally agree. I think we've been saying that every freaking episode.
I know.
Oh man, still haven't heard anything about that yet. I'm fingers crossed. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah, so I mentioned that I really liked the creative team of Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen, and the comic that they may have done other stuff, but I have of theirs is the Descender series, which is creator owned by them through Image. And then I think Ascender, I think, is the name of the second series that continues it. It's about this robot that is designed as a human companion. And then there's a big kind of intergalactic catastrophe. And so civilization is sort of trying to bounce back from it, and we skip forward several years, and this robot has just been kind of left behind, abandoned on this planet, and it all goes from there. It's a very, very good story, and it's got that same phenomenal water painting artwork. Highly recommend you check it out. That's Descender.
Sounds interesting. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about the Hawkeye television series. So I watched the first two episodes of that, and found it very interesting. I'm excited to see more of it. So,
yeah, I haven't seen it yet, Drew, but I'm very excited because I've mentioned before I love the Matt Fraction run on Hawkeye that I know the show is drawing pretty heavily from. So I can't wait. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, y'all have to check that out. All right, and also don't forget to check out our other show on the ESO Patreon. It's an exclusive Earth Station DCU Classics. Kevin Eldridge from the Flopcast and I talk about, we go back to the year 1991. I talk about Armageddon 2001, and he brings up some obscure comic. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. Miniseries. So yeah, check that out. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus. Coming up next week, we've got Blue and Gold, Aquaman the Becoming, Nubia and the Amazons, Wonder Woman Evolution, Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, Batman Secret Files the Gardener, Batman, Nightwing, Green Lantern, Justice League, Superman, Son of Kal-El, and of course our DC television shows, Supergirl, Titans, Why the Last Man, and The Flash, Armageddon Part 1. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.